Good evening, and you're very welcome to another edition of Youth Scene on Southeast Radio. We're into phase three of the government's reopening plan, and many people in the southeast and beyond were happy to see their restaurants, cinemas, and barbers reopen and those services return to our lives. We're still not out of the woods yet, but our hard work and community spirit has helped us to get this far, and we just need an extra push now to get us over that line. You might be nervous or excited at the recent events, but remember, we're still all in this together, and there is help if you need it. Coming up on the show tonight, we'll be chatting to documentary maker Molly Cantwell from County Clare, who will tell us about her new project, Cyberkiller. She's also been looking at how teenage lives can be destroyed by the hate of others through social media and cyberbullying. Dermot Murray of the Insurance Institute will tell us a bit about apprenticeships and why they're increasingly being seen as an alternative to college. Kieran Donoghue from FDYS is back to help us sort through any anxious feelings we may have about the country reopening. He'll also outline what volunteering opportunities are out there this summer. Phil Skelton is a cycling fanatic from County Wexford, and he'll tell us why we should be all up on our bikes this summer. And finally, Amy Cahill from Gorey is an up-and-coming teenage writer. She'll give us tips on improving our own prose. That's all coming up, but first tonight, we're turning our attention to the LGBT plus community who celebrated their Pride Month from home this year. The parades and parties were put on hold thanks to COVID, not that it stopped many powerful displays online, including here in County Wexford. Wendy Carney is a youth worker with Gorey Youth Needs. She'll explain why Pride Month is so important and detail how they partied this year. But first, Wendy told me how they managed to keep working from home.
Lockdown was a weird time for, I think, for everyone really, but especially for us as youth workers. We are so used to doing face-to-face meetings and having that time and that space where we see kids, and that's where we pick up on a lot of, without them saying that there's something wrong or there's something going on, you'll be able to see it in their body language and stuff like that. So because we were doing virtual meetings, so we'd have a video call with all of them, and it's very hard to kind of get that interaction with them in that kind of sense, where you can't really pick up on things that might be going on through the body language, because it's all just in front of a screen. So we had our Zoom calls and stuff like that, and we had calls and text messages and stuff like that. So we were still keeping in contact with them, but it's not the kind of same level and same quality of contact that we would have had before. And they're missing their friends, and they're missing what they wouldn't expect. They were actually missing going to school and having that interaction with people. So that was something that I think surprised them as much as it did us, but the school aspects anyway. But then we have that space there that's just for them to come and hang out, and they can go work through whatever is going on, and that take that space away again, added in an extra stress for them, I suppose.
And you mentioned there you're a member of the Gorey Youth Needs group, and you have a youth drop-in service for teens in Gorey. What would services be like in normal times? Could anybody just drop in there?
Yeah. So it's open to everyone, really. So we have, within the service ourselves, is two primary school groups. So there's third class and fourth class are together, fifth and sixth class. And then we have full services for the secondary school students. So the whole way up from first up to sixth year. So they're kind of separated into smaller groups. So we kind of do a junior group, which is your first to third years, and then we have a senior group. There's a gaming group in the centre. There is an LGBT support, and there is an anxiety group.
So it's a very, very busy place anyway, yeah.
It's a busy centre, but the quality of work that comes out of it is just incredible.
Absolutely. And we'll just focus in on the LGBTI plus services that you offer there. And there was a study in the past few weeks from Belong To, I believe, that showed that LGBT youths were likely to be affected by the lockdown more. 90% of Irish LGBTI plus youth struggle with their mental health was the big headline figure there. Would you be surprised at that figure, that, you know, LGBTI youth were struggling more under lockdown than, you know, cis or straight people?
It's been proven again and again that the members of the LGBT community do suffer more with their mental health. Just that added extra element into their lifestyle and stuff like that can be a trigger. And then I suppose with young people, they have that outlet of school and they have the outlet of their social gatherings and their friends and stuff like that. That are the sport. If they don't have that sport in their house, So adding that into like lockdown, into the situation where they might not be in a house that's very supportive, or a lot of young people are not out to their parents and to their family, and they can be more, they're sometimes more comfortable around people who are, that know the way they feel, and they might come out to their friends before they come out to their parents, and be able to have that situation where like they can talk through it and ask their friends advice or ask us advice on how to get through them kind of conversations, to be in that situation like of home without a supportive family can just add in that extra stress and the overthinking and the negative thought cycle that they can go through sometimes. So it does, like it wouldn't surprise me as a worker, just because I would see it and I would, you know, I would chat to them about it and stuff. But I suppose for someone who's not involved with young people, it would be a shocking kind of a revelation to kind of come to, and the figures that surveys find like are just phenomenal. But what's done with the figures is like mental health for young people at the moment is pretty much the waiting times and stuff like that for counsellors is crazy. So like, where do the figures, what comes out of the figures, it's all good to get the figures, but then to actually put the work in to come up with a solution is like another piece of work altogether, I suppose.
And you mentioned there the struggles that some teenagers have with the family dynamics and that kind of thing. And I suppose back in 2015 when, you know, Ireland voted yes, and a lot of people kind of slapped themselves on the back and washed their hands and said, well, that's that problem finished now. And, you know, we've become this more open and tolerant society. Has there been any signs, you know, from your work with teenagers in Gorey and the surrounding areas that we are becoming that little bit more tolerant, or are there still, you know, big difficulties to face in that?
Yeah, no, there is. Like, on surface level, I think that there has been a big change, but then not to be the down on it, but you kind of have to question what's behind them saying, okay, yeah, we are, but are they actually, on when you take away the little shiny pride flag in their window or that they say they are, but like behind it, you kind of have to question, are they, like the belong to, have been involved in the National Climate Survey within schools, and the figures haven't changed basically in the last, like since the last time they've done the survey. And that was before, like the survey that was done before. Like it's just as many, like the figures are still as high. There hasn't been that much change within schools. I know there's a lot of our kids within school that still face, it's the same as when I was in school. The stuff that they face is still the same. The teenage behaviour is still there, you know, the taunting and the teasing. I think it's more of like an educational thing as well, and like a lot of some teachers don't know how to address the situation. So rather than addressing it, sometimes it's not addressed, and it's not just teachers, it's kind of across the community, the way it's addressed and the way it's handled sometimes could be better. But I think it's the effort that people put into it rather than whether they're getting it right or they're wrong. So if they're putting in the effort, people, like kids, see that, and they see that they're putting in the effort. But if they don't, it can be a snowball effect, and something small can come into a big, can manifest into something much bigger than it really is.
Sure, and that's why I suppose something like Pride, you know, the Pride Month and these Pride parades that we've seen, you know, sort of grow exponentially over the last couple of years, they've been so important, not just to, you know, celebrate LGBT communities and that kind of thing, but to create awareness for the cis and straight communities as well, I suppose. So just in case people don't know what Pride is, just explain to us in sort of broad terms, what is Pride?
Pride dates back a long time before I was even... before I was even born. But it basically was a celebration for people to feel safe and feel seen and feel included, and it was a day for them to just celebrate the pride that they feel for themselves and their own being and their sexual orientation. So that's changed over the years. It's become a bigger, much bigger thing, and as more people and corporate companies have got involved and they've invested money and they've given different things, like everyone has seen the pride parades from all around the world, like, and you know, some countries don't even have them yet, like there's, like depending on the laws in countries, like some countries it's still illegal to be out and seen and be proud. So it's something that as it becomes more seen, then like it can be seen to kind of grow. Like Ireland's Pride Parade 10 years ago is nothing compared to the one that we had last year. And that we just see it kind of grow. And it's just for people to get out and celebrate and for kids to be, to see the diversity within the communities is incredible to see the support. It's not just members of the LGBT community that go out and celebrate. It's cis allies that are coming out and celebrating them as well. So I think it's really important, and it's a great day. It's great. We had Pride Month there, so it was great to see the efforts that people still made this year, even though we didn't have their parades, to have their virtual parades or their parties and show up for the members of the LGBT community.
Sure, and obviously we were under lockdown and there wasn't, you know, these big massive parades in the streets of Dublin or whatever. But were you able to hold any special events in Gore Youth Needs online maybe?
Yeah, so we had a little celebration. We actually waited until just on Monday there because obviously because of lockdown we weren't able to meet in big groups. So we wanted to have something that they could have even just a few. So it was 14 kids and we actually rented out a space and we had a DJ come in and had a DJ set. But they all received Pride packs from Belong To. So they were all sent out to their houses, which was a great initiative by them that they had that little bit of Pride and they had to bring in the Pride home. So they were all able to be involved in that, even though they were all separate at home by themselves, that they all got those packs and they all felt included and felt celebrated.
Absolutely brilliant that they were able to come together, and even that small token of appreciation that might go a long way to helping somebody who might be struggling with the anxiety that we mentioned earlier on. Wendy, in your opinion, what can the cis and straight communities do to become better allies for the LGBT plus community?
I think like education, I think it's a matter of some people are just ignorant of the facts and they don't understand. Being willing to listen and be willing to appreciate the different experiences people have, and it might not be their reality, but it is someone else's. So to be able to listen and understand and try to learn themselves and see the bias that they might have in themselves. Like there's sometimes someone will say something really simple and be like, oh God, I didn't realise that that's the way I act or the way I see things. And I'm like, now I can see that it is completely different for other people than it is for me.
Brilliant, Wendy. And finally, if anyone is struggling or needs someone to talk to, how can they get in touch with you guys?
Yeah, so ourselves, we have, if you can get in touch by email, info@gyng.ie. And then there's loads of different, we can signpost you to different supports that is available either in your area. Like we tie in with a lot of, myself, I'm on the national network of youth workers that are LGBT youth workers. So I tie in with a lot of different youth workers from around the Wexford area. So even if you're not from Gorey, I can put you in touch with someone that might be closer to you. Or there is text lines available as well. And there's different websites that have support on them. So even if you want to just get in touch with us, and I can put you in touch with whatever is most suitable for you.
Wendy Carney there of Gore Youth Needs, doing some stellar work in making everyone feel safe and equal, whatever their orientation is. As we all know, hate and abuse can be insidious in our everyday lives. For every lovely post on social media, there's another nasty comment underneath it. Unfortunately, anyone can be a victim of the actions of bullies online, as the family of Nicole Fox found out in 2018. After a sustained campaign of hate, both online and in real life, Nicole died by suicide, leaving behind a whole community affected by her death. Documentary maker Molly Cantwell wanted to get to the bottom of the situation regarding cyberbullying in Ireland. She explores it in her new project, Cyber Killer, Kesca Say. The main point of the documentary was the proposed law, which arose out of the death of Nicole, and we'll talk a bit about that shortly. The following discussion does contain references to bullying and suicide, so if that is something that may affect you, I would advise you to turn over for now. Listener discretion is advised, but we will have some good stuff coming up later on in the hour. I started by asking Molly why she chose the topic to focus on.
So basically, for a college assignment, we had to make a radio documentary. And I kind of was interested in the area of the psychology behind cyberbullying and online hatred. Obviously, the death of Caroline Flack was kind of just around the time that I was starting to make the documentary. So that kind of pushed me in that direction then again as well. my lecturer in college actually sent me a link for Coco's Law for the petition. And I started reading about her story, and I'd heard about it before, but I hadn't read about it too in depth. I started reading about it and I was like, no, this has to be the centre of my documentary. So it was all stemmed from Nicole's story. And then I contacted Jackie Fox, her mother. She was straight away was interested in doing an interview, and then kind of the rest of it led from there. Like, I centered the documentary around her and kind of found the rest of the bits when I was doing some research. So that's kind of where the idea came from.
Yeah, and Jackie, of course, down here in Wexford, telling you all about her experiences of losing a child to online bullying. Can you give us an outline of what Nicole's story was and how Jackie has been dealing with it ever since?
Nicole experienced, it started with kind of physical bullying, where she started going out to nightclubs when around the age of 18, and she was quite small. So she would be elbowed on the dance floor, or she'd have her drink knocked over. It was two girls that she thought were her friends, but obviously turned out not to be. They used to invite her out and they would burn her with a hair curler. They would, you know, just torment her in every way possible. And then they set up a WhatsApp group and started inviting people into the WhatsApp group. And like, if it wasn't enough to be kind of bullying her physically, they'd take it out on her online as well. They'd send her messages telling her to kill herself, to slit her wrists. It was just constant abuse. And then it started kind of, more people started getting involved. Jackie was telling me at one stage, I think there was about 30 people kind of in this WhatsApp group, and they'd be spreading things about Nicole. Like, they'd put up posts on Facebook but not tag her, but it was obvious that it was aimed at her. So she just kind of experienced years and years of torture. And then she, I think it was 2015 that she took an overdose, and her mom brought her to the hospital. And she had to stay in the hospital for a few nights after it just got worse. They were trying to take like credit for it. Like, the two girls would be like, she tried to commit suicide because of me. And the other one would be like, no, it was because of me. So it just got worse and worse and worse. Jackie tried to go to the police, but because Nicole was over the age of 18, she would have had to go herself. And then she didn't want to be the person going to the police and getting the police to their door. She thought it would make it worse. She just went really, really downwards and into herself. And January 2 years ago, Jackie and her brothers were out of the house, and she died a few days later. The family got a chance to say goodbye. She was on life support in the hospital, but she passed away a few days after that.
An absolutely harrowing experience for the family, I'm sure. But what have Jackie and the rest of the family, what have they been doing since Nicole's unfortunate death?
Since that, because there's kind of no, currently in the laws in Ireland, there's nothing to protect victims of online hatred at all. There's nothing that can stop anybody from putting anything on social media at all. Like, you could constantly torment somebody on social media, and yes, you could report their account, but that's about as much as you can do. There's no criminal charges in Ireland. Since Nicole's death, Jackie has been trying to get laws put into place in Ireland. So she's been doing marches and speaking at different things and trying to get as many people behind her as possible. She's a petition up online on change.org called Let's Bring in Coco's Law. She was lucky enough to kind of get into the Dáil, and she met with a few TDs, and it's a cross-party kind of thing. It was Brendan Howland of Labour that kind of wanted to front it the most, but it's kind of a cross-party thing that they just want this law put into place. It's passed through phase one and phase two, and now it's sitting in phase three, where it will be brought into place. But it's just obviously because our government is a bit up in the air and everything's starting to settle down at the moment, that it's sitting there and it needs to be brought in faster. And I know even over the last few weeks, there's been more kind of influencers coming out and talking about online hatred. So I think it's really important now that she wants as many people. If we can get as many signatures on the petition, you know, the government has to listen a bit more. So that's what she's trying to do at the moment.
I suppose the really remarkable thing about Nicole's story is just how unremarkable it is, that she was just a normal girl and this terrible tragedy was just brought upon her through no fault of her own, that she was just targeted for whatever reason by, you know, these two girls at first, and then, you know, it sort of spiraled from there. Cyberbullying is something that we've all dealt with in some form, whether it's just a small nasty comment a once-off on Facebook, or maybe there is this more sustained campaign of hate. Did you find that when researching this documentary that this was unfortunately universal to us all?
Well, definitely. I think that it's something that everyone has experienced, like you said, in some form or another. But the amount of, especially young women that you see that are plagued with it online, and that, you know, it starts from a certain age and then it just spirals. And there's so many young women, I think over the last few years especially, that have taken their lives because of online hatred, that it's something that really needs to be brought to the forefront of importance for the government, and they need to be sitting down and discussing how they can change this. Because it's not only is our mental health system a complete joke in Ireland, but we need to be putting things in place that there is criminal proceedings that can happen to people that are perpetuating this online hatred, because it's not enough to sit back and let somebody get away with this. You know, just because you're doing it online doesn't mean it hurts any less. It should be a criminal offence, and it's mind-boggling that it isn't.
What do you think that parents can do to tackle this problem if they do spot their own child being bullied, or maybe spot that their child is bullying?
So I think it's really important from a young age to have open discussions with your children about the internet, because obviously even now more so than before. I'm only 22, but I grew up in like the era of like flip phones, and we all didn't have access to the internet. It was a dial-up broadband. But nowadays it's so close to all of the young children. It's like my little brothers would have iPads and, you know, are exposed to it every day. And I think even more so now because of the coronavirus, and we're all going to be kind of doing more online learning, that it's so much easier for children to have access to the internet, that it needs to be a topic of conversation in every household. It needs to be something that when, you know, your child is setting up an account wherever, that it's monitored closely, especially kind of with younger children. But, you know, we need to, I think everyone does to a degree, but we need to be teaching kids that, you know, what you say online hurts. It hurts the same as if you were to push somebody in the playground, or if you were to hurt somebody, but it can hurt even more when you're saying mean things to them online. And I think that that's just a conversation that parents need to be having on the regular, and kind of checking in with their children, and you know, especially with younger children, I definitely think that parents should have the passwords to their accounts and just be checking and kind of observing. And then just even with, you know, young adults or older teenagers, to just kind of be keeping an eye, checking in and making sure everything is okay. And I know at that kind of age, it's hard, you know, that you want your privacy, but, you know, just checking in and, you know, making sure that everything's okay with them. It's really hard because there's so little you can do about, you know, what your teenager or what your young adult is doing online. And I just think it's important that we all have conversations to make sure that our mental health is all okay. That's kind of the most important thing, I think.
Absolutely. And finally, Molly, if anybody does want to check out the documentary, where can they find it online?
So you can find it on SoundCloud under the name Cyber Killer Qu'est-ce que c'est? And it's up on SoundCloud, and that's available anytime to everyone. So that's where it is.
The maker of Cyber Killer, Molly Cantwell, speaking to me this week. If you have been affected by the topic we've just discussed, you can find help with Samaritans online at samaritans.org, or you can ring PSA House on 1800 247 247. Both of those services are available 24/7. You can also find out more information about Coco's Law at alustforlife.com. Moving on now, and we'll head to the break shortly, but first we'll focus on the area of apprenticeships, which may be an option for you if college doesn't feel like the right fit. Not everyone is ready for another 3 or 4 years of school right after secondary, and you may feel now is the time to go into the world of work. Then maybe the insurance practitioner apprenticeship might be for you. It's an option to get into an industry like insurance, and looks like the way forward for all sectors in Ireland. Dermot Murray is the CEO of the Insurance Institute, who are offering this course. He started by telling me why apprenticeships are becoming so popular.
Yeah, I think that over the last maybe 10 or 15 years, there's been a huge increase in the amount of Irish people who have gone to college, as we all know. And yes, there's nothing wrong with that. College years are great, but it's not for everybody. First of all, you got to be able to operate without an income for a few years. And secondly, some people just prefer working, you know. Some people prefer the actual getting involved, mucking in, doing the work as well. And So the insurance apprenticeship is actually an amalgam of both. You go to work, you do your job, you get paid a salary, but every Thursday or Tuesday, one day a week, you put on your headphones and go to a virtual classroom in Sligo IT, soon to be university, and you're in college there for the day. So that's the difference. As well as that, you got to study. We reckon you got to do about 10 hours a week other than the day in college.
And this sort of virtual classroom, is that due to social distancing concerns, or is that just the way
it's it's a very good question. It has worked out very well, Aidan, in social distancing times. But no, we put this together in 2016 with IT Sligo, who are one of the most innovative third level colleges in the country. And what we wanted was a situation whereby, you know, somebody can go to work in their office in Arklow or in Goree or in Dublin or in Cork or wherever, and they don't have to travel to go to college. You know, they team up with their classmates in a virtual classroom once a week, and they're at work in the normal way. It's just that they're not available to do the work because they're, as I say, in this classroom, they're in front of a screen and they have their headphones on for the day, you know.
We see when the conversation comes around to the Leaving Cert that many people are starting to feel that secondary school is kind of too focused on just progression to college. And we see these stats come out about schools every single year, how many of the 6 years went on to progress to college. And it's just these apprenticeships are just a different way for people to achieve possibly the same results or even better.
Yeah. And what we've been amazed at, Aidan, is the results of for our final year students. Our first crop graduated last summer. That was the class of 2016. They graduated in 2019, and over two-thirds of them got firsts. So we had to really, really have a look at this, and the external examiners and the people in Sligo IT were just really investigating the results. And what they found was that people who were working and studying the subject at the same time had an infinitely higher understanding of the subject matter than people who were just studying it. You know, I can imagine that would apply to engineering, to accountancy, to law, to insurance, to anything, you know. The actual working at it every day gives you a far deeper understanding than potentially just studying it, you know.
You also mentioned that this is an opportunity to make a bit of money while also being in college, because 7 out of 10 parents that you chatted to in the survey there said the cost and affordability was a major concern. And, you know, I've been through college. A lot of people have been through college. It is a struggle to pay for it sometimes. So at least it does take one of the worries off your shoulders that, you know, it is being paid for.
Now you said it. You know, look, come here. You know, we all have great memories of college days, but most of us were absolutely skint for the whole time, you know. And you know where it really comes? It really comes into play if somebody has actually done a degree already. Maybe somebody's done an arts degree or an agriculture degree or something, and they're saying, yeah, well, that's not really, you know, I have a degree and that's great, but it's not really what I want to do, right? So I want to do something else. But the notion of going back to college for another 3 years and or another 4 years and being skint. So what we have is a lot of, we call them second time rounders, you know, people who maybe have a degree already, but have decided that something like insurance is where they want to go career-wise. But they can't go, you know, they can't go back to college. It's not on for them to go back. They've got to earn some money. So, you know, this is about working full-time and earning. And it's not a student salary, or it's the same starting salary that people get when they start in insurance or financial service industries. You know, it's not a stipend or anything like that. It's a proper salary.
And just for people that might be interested in the insurance practitioner apprenticeship, how did they get involved?
Every question you want answered and everything you want to know about it is on what we call the Earn and Learn website. So you go into Earn and Learn, and that answers all the questions. And what it also will do over the next couple of months is that it will, the people who are recruiting the apprentices, Aidan, will put up ads for the jobs on that site. So it's sort of a portal that brings together the candidates and the employers, for want of a better word, you know.
That was Dermot Murray, the CEO of the Insurance Institute here in Ireland. We'll head to the break now, but when we come back, we'll be getting an update from Ciarán and the FDYS.